Merrick, I hate getting all edged about something I read on Twitter before we hop on the air, because it completely derails like whatever opening we've decided to do.
We never decide an opening. What are you talking about? What opening did we decide to do today?
This incessant declaration by Ryan Lambert, Puck Daddy writer, friend of mine, smart dude, that you should give the MVP award to someone from a losing team. It just makes me insane. Okay, this is the argument again. This is Lambert. If a team doesn't make the playoffs, that is no reflection on a given player's value, and thus excluding him from MVP consideration is idiotic. By this argument, a player who scored one quarter of his team's goals but missed the playoffs anyway was not valuable. Goodbye-bye, 60-goal Stamkos. I'm sorry. Again, I know we argued this last week about the heart. What is the sense in bestowing MVP on a player whose ultimate success of his team was inconsequential?
I'll tell you why. Because it's an individual award, Greg, and nowhere in the definition of the Hart Trophy does it say your team has to make the playoffs.
Well, I know that.
Like, I completely see Lambert's point. I can completely say if the Columbus Blue Jackets even fail, Bobrovsky gets a Hart. I can make the argument that New Jersey Devils, now that they're eliminated, sorry, Wish, you can make the argument that Ilya Kovalchuk should win the Hart Trophy. Because by definition, this is not a team award.
If it was putting your team in the playoffs,
then it would become a team award. This is still an individual award.
Yeah, except for the fact that both of those cases, you just named teams that were right at the bubble. If the Devils are 20 points out, you wouldn't be saying anything.
Because they're both within sniffing distance
of the playoffs. Absolutely.
You can make the argument. No, because playoffs don't matter. Now all of a sudden we're projecting playoffs onto this trophy. We seem to think that the definition of this trophy, even though it's not written, even though it's not actually part of the definition of this trophy, we feel the same that there's some side secret that comes along with this trophy that your team has to make the playoffs. Your team has to do something in order for you to qualify for this individual award that speaks nothing about playoff success. You can argue Stamkos, Wish, you can even argue Martin St. Louis. And maybe even stronger, you can argue Martin St. Louis. He may win the Art Ross trophy, and he is one of the main reasons why Steven Stamkos snaps 60 goals in every season. You know what? More than I think about it, I'm Team Lambert on this one.
The Jack Adams Award is an annual award presented by the National Hockey League Broadcasters Association to the NHL coach adjudged to have contributed most to his team's success.
Yeah.
So by that measure, for the coach of the year, it's success, right? You would not give the Jack Adams to a non-playoff coach, correct?
How do you judge how well a coach has coached? He's making the team better. The Hart Trophy is about an individual player.
So you give the Jack Adams to a coach that wasn't in the playoffs too?
No. For that definition, the way you judge a coach is how well he did with his team, and did they approach the playoffs? Did they make it to the playoffs?
I happen to think that Jacques Lemaire contributed greatly to the Devils' success the year they missed the playoffs 2 years ago. I mean, granted, still missed, but clearly they were successful under his tenure. Why wouldn't you give him Coach of the Year?
He didn't coach the entire season. Now he came in to clean up John McClain's mess.
Well, it's because he didn't make the playoffs. That's why. It's obviously the reason he would have won if they had made the playoffs.
You're not listening to me. It's different.
Well, go ahead.
It's different because the way you judge coaches is based on how the team performs. Nowhere in the definition of the Hart Trophy is say the player who was able to propel his team into the playoffs or take his team to heights never achieved before. No. It is an award given to a player who is judged most valuable to his team. Period.
That's it.
Finally, playoffs. Where does it say playoffs?
So what
does it say postseason in there?
What is wrong with putting inside the definition of value by putting in the giant value umbrella that we're talking about here, sliding in the concept of wins and losses? What is wrong with that idea? Like, why is value such a stats whore proposition when value should be about success or failure on the ice?
Then put that make that part of the definition of the Hart Trophy.
I'm saying it is part of the definition. I'm saying part of the definition of value is wins and losses.
You're projecting that onto this word valuable. Okay? That's what you're doing. You're projecting your belief onto what valuable
there,
is.
There's no projecting or giant value umbrella that we're talking about here, sliding in the concept of wins and losses. What is wrong with that idea? Like, why
nothing's
is value such
and
a stats whore proposition when value should be about success or failure on the ice?
Then put that definite, make that part of the definition of the Hart
Trophy. I'm saying it is part of the definition. I'm saying part of the definition of value is wins and losses.
You're projecting that onto this word valuable. Okay? That's what you're doing. You're projecting your belief onto what valuable is.
There's no projecting or anything. The word is value, and to me, wins and losses are value.
Part of it?
Of course. The essential part of it. The whole damn season is geared towards whether or not you make the playoffs.
It's an individual award in a team sport. Okay? It's an individual award in a team sport. No, nowhere in there does it say that you have to do X, Y, and Z, or Z in your case, with a team. At all.
As I said to Lambert,
you're most valuable to that team.
If you're going to do this thing where you give it to the best player on a shitty team every year, Rick Nash would be the Nick Lidstrom of the Hart Trophy.
No one's saying give it to a good player.
Ilya Kovalchuk would be the Nick Lidstrom of the Hart Trophy. Any of these guys.
You can make a case.
But you're simply saying that if you have the majority of your team's goals, the majority of your team's points, if you're a goaltender who miraculously puts up a 2.80 goals against and a 910 save percentage on a team that loses 50 games, like these are the things that you give the heart for.
What? Sounds pretty valuable to me. Doesn't it sound pretty valuable to you?
To what end if they've got 50 losses?
To what end? It's an individual award wish. To the end of, this guy played a great frickin' season. This guy was head and shoulders above everybody else on his team. This guy was clearly the most valuable player to his team.
If we followed the Merrick Lambert model for the most valuable player award, you know what it would be? It would be a gold star on field day. It'd be an achievement award, an achievement ribbon for people on terrible hockey teams. You know why the Hart Trophy has the mystique it does, why winning the Hart's a big effing deal? It's because it goes to the most valuable player, to the team that he elevates, that he pushes, that he shoves into either playoff contention, a playoff seed, or top of the conference. That's why it's such a big deal that it is.
So who do you give the Hart Trophy to this year then?
Right now I'd give it to Bobrovsky if they make it. If they don't, then I wouldn't, because the journey wasn't completed.
Regardless of what he did, if they come one point short, if Dallas ends up or Detroit ends up taking that eighth and final playoff spot, regardless of what Bobrovsky has done this year for that team, where expectations were Seth Jones, okay, not Max Domi, Seth Jones, you're not going to give him. You wouldn't give him any consideration for the award.
By my definition of the award, I would not. But again, I would not have a problem if he won. But again, it comes back to my essential point, which is that the only reason I wouldn't have a problem with it is because at the end of the day, Columbus will come up all of a point or two short. It still comes back to success or failure on the ice. This notion that you can give it to Rick Nash for potting 40 in a tremendously shitty season for Columbus is asinine. It devalues the award to the point where we might as well do it at the beginning of the show and do the Jack at the end of the show, because at least the Jack is about what we're actually playing the regular season for, which is success or failure.
You know what is the devalued awards, including the Stanley Cup trophy? The salary cap. All right? Because it made it a mediocre league. It made it a league of parity. That's the buzzword the NHL loves so much. That has done more to damage awards, specifically Stanley Cup, than anything else. Okay.
Jonathan Willis writes in, if Stamkos only wanted it a little more, he'd have propelled the other 20 skaters in his team through sheer will. Again, this isn't saying that these players don't have value to their teams. It just says that in my definition of what value is, value also translates to wins and losses, and I value the contribution of a Sidney Crosby or an Alex Ovechkin. No one can look at Alex Ovechkin and Steven Stamkos this season and say they're even in the same conversation for most valuable player.
Absolutely right, but no one is also saying that every year you're going to give it to a bottom feeder who happens to be on a bottom feeding team. I'll take Alexander Ovechkin over Steven Stamkos every day of the week this year, for sure. Going away. The one thing I won't go for is Sidney Crosby as the Hart Trophy winner this year. Because he's gone, Penguins are still rocking. How is he the most valuable player to his team? Explain that to me.
Well, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. I'm thinking in his case, you're going to have to deal with the fact he's lost about a third of the season to injury, and his team is still quite good. Although the idea that you judge a most valuable player based on, you know, how the team does in his absence, I think is sort of unfair, don't you?
No.
I totally think it is. Unless you're gonna Tanya Harding every MVP candidate to see how their team plays without them for a good 2 week stretch. There's simply no way you can assign that same criticism to other MVP candidates, can you?
But when it does happen, doesn't it give you sort of a baseline for how valuable they are to their team?
It does.
Like, no one's talking about Jeff Kalulying, Jonathan Taves, and Alexander Ovechkin and Sergei Bobrovsky to see how their teams are gonna fare without them.
Well, I'm pretty sure.
But if it does happen, don't you have to sort of pause here for a second and say to yourself, you know what? Pittsburgh's more than okay without Sidney Crosby in the lineup. How can we give him a trophy that is judging a player who is most valuable to his team when without him, they're fine?
First of all, you can't convince me that Corey Perry hasn't thought about Jeff Gulliling. Jonathan Taves at least once this season.
Oh yeah, and about half the Detroit Red Wings and about half the St. Louis Blues.
I completely agree with you that I think that is a way that the MVP is measured. I mean, look no further than Henrik Sedin winning the Hart based partly on the fact that oh my God, he actually can play hockey without his brother. So I mean, I think. Oh, and Corey Perry. I mean, Perry also won the Hart, I believe, because wasn't Getzlaf injured for a good part,
yep.
Right? So the absence makes the heart grow fonder. HART theory.
Oh,
thank
Jesus.
You. Theory is exactly right, and it's exactly how a lot of the voters think. You're
and
right.
The Perry one was interesting too because he played a bunch at center too. Actually, they kept auditioning Bobby Ryan and Corey Perry at center during that season where he won the Richard Trophy.
I'm hoping the Blue Jackets make it, okay? Because that would make the Hart thing for me very easy. By the way, Derek writes in, please guys, please, please, please stop talking about the Hart. Everything has been covered. Wish likes Bob. We get it. I don't think everything's been covered. It's a good debate to have. I mean, especially this season because what you're looking at right now is, in my eyes at least, a clear-cut candidate in Bobrovsky, where if the Blue Jackets make it, there's no argument you can make to not give him the Hart. A Crosby candidacy in which he's missed the third of the season, and his team's played pretty damn well without him. An Ovechkin argument in which he was one of the reasons why they suck so bad for the 2 months of the season, and then he got them back into contention on his own, basically. And then you've got Jonathan Taves and Patrick Kane. Kane in which, you know, Kane was the engine for the Blackhawks for the first maybe, I'd say, 2 months of the season, and then Taves, I think, became the clear candidate after that. It's a really interesting field this year for a lot of different reasons. I'm hoping Bob makes it so I don't have to get into the nuances of those other debates. But if he doesn't, it's going to be interesting to see exactly how it plays out. So I think the Hart debate's worth having this year.
Does the Norris Trophy winner have to get his team in the playoffs too, Wish?
No, because that's more of a player of the year award, don't you think?
See, that's the difference. The Hart Trophy right now is not the I think the way it's voted on in a lot of ways, people just give it to who they think the best player is. Right, and that's why Sidney Crosby is going to get the most votes this year. I still think that Crosby ends up winning this thing.
Best player when you look, best team usually.
Yeah, that's kind of the way it goes too. That's kind of the way, and I don't know. You can look at it and say it's just lazy. That's probably probably pretty true, but I think a lot of people just look at it and say, well, whomever the best player is, and as a peak performer this year before he went out, there was no one better than Crosby. He was the best. He was the finest player in the NHL, hands down, scoring at a clip that eclipses his greatness from previous seasons.
Yeah.
Not a doubt. But missing all that time, team doing fine.
are you writing a Bob Dylan song?
Kind of rhyming there. I don't know.
Missing all that time, team doing fine, I'm on the line.
That was kind of like, I was kind of Bob Dylan-esque there a little bit. I just needed like a guitar and...
Everybody, harmonica. Stoner.
Here's a funny question about that, by the way.
What's that?
Why is it when you're a musician and you have a guitar, okay, and you sing folk songs and you have a harmonica and you play the harmonica while you're playing the guitar, it's like, wow, look at this artist, a man who's true to his craft. How come it, like, the moment you put cymbals on that guy's knees, he's a clown? In the exact same song, the minute you put cymbals on the knees, like, no matter, he could be writing Subterranean Mystic, it doesn't matter. He could be writing, Gimme Shelter, doesn't matter. He's a clown the minute cymbals go on the knees. Why does cymbals on the knees mean loser, clown?
So in other words, if we were in concert, we heard, hey, hey, my,
yeah, that's right.
Rock and roll will never die.
Why cymbals? Why do cymbals kill it?
But it harmonica does, gets it? A free pass. Like right. that you know, old school braces harmonica hookup that you have around your head. How come that gets a free pass, but cymbals get scorned?
Man, I'm with you, man. I wish we had more cymbals than harmonica. Can you imagine old school John Popper from Blues Traveler using the cymbals instead of the harmonica? It looked like an effing trick from SeaWorld. It would have been amazing.
Those would have to be some big, those are like 6-inch cymbals. Those would be like Zildjian Ride cymbals, man. Those aren't like splash cymbals, bro. Those are big.
All right, couple more before the top of the show. Phil Lombardi writes in, heart goes to Parise, not for his play with the Wild, but for his absence from the Devils. We'll get to the Devils.
That was Marty's point last night.
Adrian writes in, I'm with you, Wyshynski, normally, but I think this year should be an outlier. Bob deserves it no matter what. He can make the argument again. But again, as I said before, in you know, response to the Lambert Merrick initiative, it's because of the success of the team. It's not simply because he's as valuable to his team. His value in this case is because the Blue Jackets were expected to be top of the lottery, and instead they're the eighth seed. So it's all comes down to success on the ice, as it should.
Do you think there's as much? Hang on, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Do you think there's as much value in making a bad team good as there is making a good team great?
See, that's the essential argument about
Bobrovsky's made a bad team good.
Right.
Right. He hasn't made a good team great. And even if they fall short, do you have no? Does the word value still fit? If you've taken a team that was in the competition for Seth Jones and Nathan MacKinnon and put them in the middle of the pack for the draft this year?
At the end of the day, it may not matter because it all comes down to perception. And the perception is always going to be in awards voting that if you make something out of quote unquote nothing, it's more impressive than being the guy who makes something great out of something. So Mike Babcock never wins the Jack Adams, but the coach who takes the shitty team and makes it a playoff team always wins the Jack Adams. It's the same principle. It's always going to be like that because you know why? Because at the end of the day, voters are creatures, I don't want to say lazy is such a terrible term to use, but the creatures of the obvious.
You look for an
obvious.
Creatures
of the obvious. Yeah.
And you can see, like, when Bruce Boudreau won, okay?
Yeah.
It's a game 82, 3-1 against the Florida Panthers on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
Or Sunday evening, I think it was. But you followed the narrative. You followed the story arc all season long.
Right.
So you could follow it, and you saw what Gabby did to that team when he took over from Glenn Hanlon. It's an easy one to follow.
And finally, here comes the. Remember the fight in Anchorman where all of a sudden PBS shows up? Here comes, you know,
yeah.
In our debate about Crosby, Ovechkin, Bobrovsky, Taves, and Kane. Here comes PBS. Joshua Kay. Boys, settle down. I think we can all agree by both your qualifications, Tavares is a worthy choice.
I'll take him either way.
No mention of Tavares for the heart. David Gordon, no love for Tavares. Yeah, there it is.
It's true, though. He's in there. Good for them for pointing it out.
Oh, without question. He's slowed down a little bit, don't you think, a little bit towards the end? Slowed down
but
a little.
Take him off that. You know what? His foot speed's fine now. No one talks about his skating anymore other than you and I making jokes about it, which really shouldn't be jokes anymore because his skating is fine.
Hey, Tavares is worthy of heart contention, for sure.
Totally.
But peel away the layers, and it's Nabokov is the reason they're in the playoffs.
Again, I'll come back to something I said last week. You could give the Hart Trophy to a goalie every year as far as I'm concerned.
We shall see.
You really could.
Yeah. All right, coming up on the program today, Matt Cook talk, including the question of the day.
Oh, boy. Oh, man.
We're getting some robust answers for this question of the day. As you may have heard, Jack Edwards said something about Matt Cook over the weekend. What we would like you to do is give us your outrageous comparison about Matt Cook. Matt Cook is
blank.
To blank.
Blank is
to Matt Cook. It's Puck Daddy like, blog like at yahoo.com, at Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick.
It's essentially, folks, what Greg is asking, I tweeted this out after the QOD, essentially we want you to out Jack Edwards.
Yes.
That's what we're looking for you to do today.
And we will get to Jack in a moment, but first, oh, by the way, also coming up very soon, Tyson Nash to talk about the Phoenix Coyotes and the Western Conference playoffs. Also, you know, a couple of words about the Devils being eliminated probably coming out of this mouth at some point.
No.
And with that, we'll start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
We're going to get corner offices out of this one for sure, Greg. Right away, your BS detector should go off. Why do I know this crap? What's wrong with me? Are you insane?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
You and I are not quite that dissimilar. La 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 la, hockey, hockey, hockey.
Seattle is playing excellent defense these days.
What does that even mean?
Debate hockey.
So much junior hockey knowledge in that big juicy brain.
Oh, yeah.
Pop culture.
See, I kind of look at our podcast here like Jazz Odyssey.
There's some bloggers that are great, that are entertaining, that are factual. It's fabulous.
Damn right, JD.
And more hockey.
Just simply need to shoot off the side of the barn. That's how I developed my wrist shot, shooting frozen cow patties in Lloydminster.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Merrick versus Wyshynski, huh?
All right. Yeah. Very excited to be back on the air after a long weekend.
What did you do this weekend?
Took care of the kid. Watched some hockey. She was cool too. She was hanging out and watching hockey with me too, which was nice.
Yeah, my oldest was sick, so we watched a lot of hockey together. Normally he wants to like run around. He'll watch like a half a period and then want to go do something, mainly go downstairs and play hockey, set up his nets. But we watched almost a full game on Saturday together.
Also took her to the Disney store for the first time, which was...
How'd that go?
Well, she refers to it as the princess store, and I had
she's
to buy her...
princess phase right now, eh?
Yeah, I had to buy her fairy wings, so... So right. She's either going to go clubbing or she's going to pretend to be Tinkerbell, one of the two. Hey, breaking news, by the way, real quick, because obviously we dealt with this story a lot last week. Federal charges against the surviving Boston Marathon bomber, charged with using a weapon of mass destruction against persons and property at the Boston Marathon. So that is a charge that could result in the death penalty. So federal charges for him is what
you
just
know
came
what,
down.
Because we saw two Bruins games last week, and one of them that was postponed in between. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this on the weekend. When you look at that, the Buffalo Sabres game, that was a healing game, I think, for a lot of people. And did you get the sense that Saturday's game was the celebration game? Like, both these two games for Boston, the last two Boston games that I saw, really, in a lot of ways, didn't have a whole lot to do with hockey.
Yeah.
I saw a group of people coming together in the game against the Buffalo Sabres to heal, and then I saw a bunch of people come together in Boston on Saturday to get together to celebrate. Is that how it felt for you?
The first one, definitely. The second one, it was kind of that vibe, but I also think the Red Sox kind of had that vibe more so than the Bruins game, maybe. Yeah. But neither here nor there. All right, joining us now on the line, he is the TV color analyst for the Phoenix Coyotes and a former NHLer. He is Tyson Nash, back on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast, and we're happy to have him here. How are you, Tyson?
I'm good, boys. Just enjoying the lovely city of Detroit.
Oh, nice.
Things that have never been... Tyson, the Coyotes, as we begin play this evening, still alive. A tragic number of 3, 46 points on the year, 4 games left. That puts them 5 off the pace of both the Wild and the Blue Jackets. Your thoughts, sir, your optimism in the Coyotes pulling this thing out and making the playoffs.
Well, first of all, I got to tell you, my head is killing me from trying to figure out the math and to figure out if the Coyotes lose tonight, what happens. If they only get a point tonight, what happens mathematically? Are they in or are they out? I mean, the bottom line, and talking to Dave Tippett, they got to win the rest of the games, and even then they're not assured of a playoff spot. But, you know, I think the start of this road trip with the teams that they played, St. Louis, Chicago, and now here in Detroit, you know, they just wanted to make sure that this game meant something. And they got a big point in St. Louis, two in Chicago, and now they hope to knock off Detroit here, which would be huge to stay alive in the fight. But this is a team that believes in themselves. This game is very much a playoff feel. I know Detroit was flying around out there this morning, as were the Coyotes. So this should make for one heck of a game tonight.
Hey, Tyson, can we back up quickly? We'll get to tonight's game against the Red Wings. You bring up the game against the Chicago Blackhawks, and in that game, I saw something that brought me back to an old Quebec Nordiques WHA and Montreal Canadiens NHL defenseman. Remember J.C. Tremblay? how he'd get center ice and he'd flip the puck towards the goaltender and would go in. We saw Radoslav Klesla do that against the Chicago Blackhawks. Take us back to your playing days. Did you ever think about, or did guys ever talk about doing that strategically? I know everyone's like, oh, good positioning, get the puck in the corner and pucks in deep and all that. But did you ever think about just like doing what Tremblay did, just lob pucks in front of goaltenders? Because when they bounce, that's a hot potato, man. You have no idea where it's going.
Well, I joked on the broadcast the other night that, you know, Chicago should know better than to leave Rusty Klesla alone 100 feet out from Corey Crawford. I mean, that's a dangerous area on the ice. So, you know what? It was funny. It happens, you know, quite a bit. I mean, surprisingly, you're right. That knuckle puck, the way they bounce, you know, when they land on edge, and I'll never forget when I was in Syracuse. I was trying to get to 20 goals for the first time in my career in the American League, and I was stuck at like 17 forever. And then all of a sudden, I went for a dump, or went for a change, and I dumped the puck in against Philadelphia, and it bounced in. I had no idea it even went in, and that was like a goal that kind of opened up the floodgates again, and eventually got me over the hump to that goal I was looking for. But you're right, it doesn't happen often, but it's almost impossible. I mean, there's nothing Corey Crawford could do on that.
No. Hey, Tyson, we all have tried here in the eastern part of the country, despite our bias, tried to keep up with the West as best we can in this truncated and separated season. But for those of us who may not have watched him as closely as you have, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, does he deserve the Norris Trophy this year?
No. You know, I love him. Don't get me wrong. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, I'm a huge fan. But, you know, this year, no. You know, I think one year he's definitely going to win it. I know he draws a lot of comparisons to Nicholas Lidstrom, which I'm not sure are 100% fair, but I think, you know, somewhat accurate. Definitely parts of his game. You can only hope that he can turn out to be half the player that Nicholas Lidstrom was, for sure. But, you know, he's been very good at times. You know, he plays huge minutes, plays against the other team's top lines, but he's 21 years old. I mean, that's a great thing. And when you talk to Oliver, you know, he said, I can still play better. I can still do things, you know, much better. And you love to hear that from a young player who just was recently signed to a big contract, that, you know, that there is more in the tank and that he can still improve in certain areas, because I can't wait to see the finished product of this guy. And, there's no question in my mind, one year and one year soon, he will win that Norris Trophy.
And Tyson, he shoots like Mark Howe, who, when he played defense for the Flyers, had the hardest wrist shot, with all due respect to Wendell Clark, in the NHL. Have you seen a defenseman wrist the puck as hard as Ekman-Larsson does?
Yeah, you know what? It's a little bit sneaky. He's worked on it a lot, because when he came into the league, you know, he didn't have that strength, you know, as most young kids don't. I think the big thing about Oliver is that he's got a real sneaky shot. You know who he reminds me of is a guy like Sergei Zubov, who, you know, it wasn't a bomb all the time, but he always found a way to get it through the net, to the net. And as a forward, that's exactly what you're looking for. You don't want a guy that comes in and just tees it up and right by your chin, because first of all, it's impossible to deflect, and second of all, you might decapitate yourself. So Al MacInnis was the only guy I felt safe when he was shooting from the point, because at least he had a real good idea of where he was going to put it. And Oliver Ekman-Larsson is very similar in that way, that he just finds a way to get those pucks through, and they're great shots because they're tippable and tough for the goaltender to stop.
You know, it's weird, Tyson, when you think about this season for the Coyotes, and again, the playoffs are still a possibility, but you know, it's going to take some help. It's going to take some heavy lifting to get them in. It seems like in the other years where they've qualified and they've thrived in the regular season, it was under duress because of all the ownership stuff. Now, I'm not saying the ownership stuff's off the table now, but we're hearing a lot less about it this year, it seems like, than in years past, where it almost felt like it was an episode of 24, where the clock is ticking down to them relocating. Maybe they need that. Are things just too calm this year on the ownership front, where there's not that sense of crazy urgency?
Yeah, you know, you laugh about it, because, you know, it's been an absolute nightmare for this team, an emotional roller coaster up and down. And yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it is something they thrived upon. But I think, you know, actually, when you really think about it, I think, you know, the clock is ticking the most right now, just because I think the NHL and the NHLPA have finally had enough of this deal, and something has to get resolved. And you know it's got to get resolved, you know, very soon, definitely before July 1, you would think. So I think, you know, maybe in fact the opposite. I just think the players are just so sick and tired of talking about it, thinking about it. And really it's a non-factor right now for this team. Great leadership, good coaching. You know, they make sure that they're focused on the task at hand. And it's been a real tough year this year for the Coyotes, I think, overall, when you think of where they are and where they were the last 3 years, making the playoffs last year in the Western Conference Finals. And, again, this is a team that needs everybody, and they haven't had everybody this year. A lot of guys overachieved last year, and this year that's just obviously not the case. Radim Gurbata has been hurt. Mike Smith missed significant time. So that's been the issue, I think.
Is this the best you've seen Bodker play, Tyson?
He's been good. I think he really had a coming out party last year in the playoffs, a couple big game-winning goals against the Chicago Blackhawks. I think the light bulb finally went on with Bodker, where he said, hey, you know what, I can actually do this. You know, I'm not going to get hurt. I am big enough. I am strong enough to make these plays. And, you know, we all know how fast he can skate. And I'll tell you what, he's got that low center of gravity. And when he makes up his mind to take that puck to the net, it's almost impossible to stop him. The guy's built like a fire hydrant. I've, in fact, never seen legs this big. And he's not a tall guy, but just very stocky. And he's got that bow-legged, wide stance. That makes for, some of the best skaters in the world are built that way. And that's why he's so dangerous. But I think Shane Doan really fought with him a lot over it, just trying to convince him, hey, you can do these things. You are skilled. Yes, you are young, but this is how you need to play to have success. And I think the light bulb went on last year for Bodker, and he's carried it into this year.
Western Conference playoff seeding bubble, what have you. First off, your thoughts on the Columbus Blue Jackets doing what they've done this year?
Well, the Columbus Blue Jackets are the Phoenix Coyotes of last year, I think. I think they're very identical. I think, you know, the fact that they got rid of, you know, Rick Nash, and they brought in some blue chip, hard-working guys, no real superstars on that team. I think all of a sudden everyone looked around and said, all right, boys, if we're going to do this, we need everybody. We need, the entire group to contribute. And that's fun to play on a team like that, because everyone plays a big part in a loss and a win. And that's all you want as a player. And obviously the goaltending. I mean, that's the difference. This Bobrovsky, I mean, he is the best story in the National Hockey League, I think. I mean, this is just incredible what he's doing, much like Mike Smith did last year for the Phoenix Coyotes. So it's been a fun story to follow, and right now they're a tough team to beat.
When you look at this 48-game shortened lockout season, what comes to your mind when you're going to look back on this 48-game season? What's going to come to your mind, both positive and negative? What surprised you? What amused you? What disappointed you? What stands out in Tyson Nash's mind?
Well, I think it's very frustrating, because it just doesn't feel like a real season, just because of how short it is. I think that, the highs and lows of an 82-game season, really aren't the same in a 48-game season. You know, you look at teams, I mean, a lot of teams, I thought Edmonton would be one of those teams that, yeah, they could sprint and play and get into the playoffs with a 48-game season. But over 82, can you do it? You know, that's the grind, and that's the real test. When you talk about the dog days of the NHL, and you need veteran players to get you through those days, as a young kid, you're used to playing, 72, whether it's in junior or college, whatever the case may be. 48, you even look at like the Toronto Maple Leafs, 48 game season, it's a lot more doable. But, 82, I'm nothing against Toronto. I mean, I think they're a great team, but, what's been the difference from last year to this year, years past for Toronto, and all of a sudden they make it this year? I mean, but, can they do it for 82? I think that's the real test. For me, and I think it's been fun at times, because the games have been so intense, but you sure don't have much room for error, as the Coyotes are a perfect example of that. You lose 7 games straight in a 48-game season, and you really don't have a whole lot of hope. So, but over 82, well, different story.
Last one for me, Tyson. I know it's been a while since you were a St. Louis Blue, but Is there any part of you that would relish seeing the Detroit Red Wings playoff streak end this year? Any shred of your former rivalry still alive in you, sir?
Hmm. Yes, absolutely. I can't tell you. I was saying that this morning on Twitter, that the minute I even get close to the Joe, I have nightmares. Just the minuses that I've taken, you know, the coach yelling at me because I'm on the ice when Yzerman's been out there, or Shanahan, you know, I gotta get off the ice. What are you doing out there when those guys are out there? You know, I mean, it's just nightmare after nightmare. So, you know, and the amount of times that they knocked us out of the playoffs, I would love to see nothing more, than, Detroit. You know, it's maybe time for somebody else to step in there. I don't know. But it's going to be a tough thing to do. This is a veteran, a lot of veteran studs on that team. Anytime you have Zetterberg and Datsyuk, I mean, you like your chances, so it's not going to be an easy task.
Let me follow that up with a quick geek question about hockey ice. I was always told that after Edmonton, Detroit had the best ice in the NHL, which still isn't, you know, the most fantastic ice, but nonetheless. Is that true, Tyson? Detroit, after Edmonton, best ice in the league?
It's pretty quick. Yeah, that's for sure. I can tell you what they do have 100%. They have the hardest boards in the National Hockey League. They hurt when you get hit into them. There's not much give. And then behind the net, definitely the most lively boards. You see those shots that miss the net. They sometimes squirt right out in front of the net, so you have to be very careful of that.
Hey, real quick. Lidstrom boards.
Yeah, indeed. Real quick before we let you go, what do you think? How do you think this Mike Smith thing's going to play out contract-wise?
Oh, that is a good question. That's a million-dollar question around here. It's going to be interesting. I sure hope that Mike Smith loves it here in Phoenix, because I know the Phoenix Coyotes are definitely high on the list. They need Mike Smith 100%. But when you look out in the market, you know, what's out there for goaltenders, unrestricted free agents, there's not many out there. And we all know what Mike Smith did last year. We've seen it at times this year. He's been banged up a little bit. I don't think he's ever been 100% health-wise. But I just don't know. I sure hope he re-signs back here with the Coyotes because he's been the backbone.
Good stuff, Tyson. All right, Tyson Nash, Coyotes broadcaster. And
yes.
We'll talk to you soon, sir. Good luck the rest of the way. Hopefully they stay in the hunt a little bit longer than the next couple days.
Sounds good, boys. Thanks again.
Follow him on Twitter, at Tyson Nash, analyst for the Phoenix Coyotes. Good point about the boards in Detroit, too. Because I've always heard that the ice is great in Detroit, which, by the way, folks, NHL ice, by and large, I shouldn't say by and large, just NHL ice in general, it's bad ice. Mm-hmm. Because all the venues are multi-use venues right now. Oh, here comes basketball, here comes a circus, here comes a show. So the ice in the NHL is bad. Like, the ice at the practice facility is always better than the ice where the team plays their home games. But the interesting thing about the boards, and Montreal had this too, Montreal used to have stiff boards. Oh, God. It never shows up. Like, the punishment that you go through never shows up in that game in Detroit or in Montreal. It'll show up in the next game. So if you're playing, like, a game in Detroit on a Tuesday and you've got Minnesota on a Thursday, those pains and those, you know, borderline injuries show up in that game against Minnesota. It's almost as if Detroit was the rink and Detroit had the boards that softened you up for the next game. You know what I mean? Like, when you catch it, okay, oh, they're playing Detroit that night. Oh, good, we're catching them the next night. Those boards will have killed that team. It's going to be easy pickings the next time we play them. That's kind of how it was with those Detroit boards.
I'm just happy to hear that he has the burning hatred of the Detroit Red Wings that was fostered during a playing career still.
You know, I'm surprised that I am genuinely surprised about that, considering, you know, and the moment that free agency in the NHL, you know, became a lot more liberal, I think a lot of players lost, you know, the hatred of teams that they played against, because you may be a member of that team one day, and it's very rare that a player goes from cradle to grave with the same team. So I'm still kind of surprised that you hang on to a hatred like that, but you know what? Good for him.
For some guys,
good for
sure,
him. Can't let it go.
And especially for a guy who played the game like Nash did. I'm sure it's different for some guys. You know what I mean?
Yep.
When you've been in the wars, it's a little different than you being a skills guy, right?
Yeah.
Like I could picture John McClane and Bruce Driver both going to the New York Rangers. I can't picture Ken Danico going to the New York Rangers. You know what I mean?
Oh, no. Yeah,
you know
that's a perfect example, too. That's a perfect example.
Yeah.
Yep. Or you can see Denny Potfan playing with the Islanders. You can never see him playing for the Rangers.
Right.
Although,
well,
did
no,
tell this
right.
Way, did, hang on, did I tell you this one?
I think we did the Keenan thing.
Yeah, when he retired, he invited him to play for the Rangers afterwards. And then Denny said he thought long and hard. Could you imagine Potfan playing for the Rangers? What do you do with the chance? That's
well,
it for the chance.
Well, I mean, it would be up there with Matt Cook playing for the Boston Bruins, which brings us to the next topic, sir. Because our old friend.
Smooth
transition. That's right. Captain Segway.
Yeah, that's good.
I should have a Segway tour here in D.C.
Okay. Let's move on to Jack.
So, Jack Edwards, our old friend, opened his app this weekend, as many of you know. If you haven't heard the clip, here it is. Boston Bruins game over the weekend against the Pittsburgh Penguins and Jack Edwards opining about the Masterton Trophy candidacy for Matt Cook last season.
Could not help but notice last season when the Pittsburgh Riders nominated Matt Cook for the Masterton Award for dedication and perseverance to hockey. The justification being how Cook had changed his ways after basically assassinating Mark Savard. Nominating Cook for the Masterton is about the equivalent of nominating Sirhan as the prisoner of the year. An outrageous lack of judgment on the part of the Pittsburgh press.
Oh, you changed your ways after essentially assassinating Mark Savard? Well, I died.
Oh, hologram Bill Masterton makes his return to the MVSW. Wow. Great.
Wow. Jack Edwards later apologized during the game for comparing Matt Cook to the assassin
the
of
killed Bobby
Robert
Kennedy.
Kennedy.
Yeah.
Now, listen, I know a lot of people jumped on this thing and put it within the context of how do you say something like this the week of the Boston Marathon bombings. I mean, okay, and granted, the context in Boston, you can't separate the two, I suppose, but on its face, no matter when you say it, comparing any National Hockey League player to Sirhan is, well, it's a little outrageous, don't you think?
Yeah. Okay, I'll tell you what, and you can't win this argument, right? You can't win this one. It was a mistake. It was a poor choice of words. Jack Edwards owned up to it right away. I'm just on his Twitter right now. I'm sorry for insulting Matt Cook, the Pittsburgh Penguins, in the National Hockey League, and anyone else upset by my Cook comments. I made a mistake. My fault all the way. This is my apology. Bad week. Bad emotional reaction by me. Recognize it. Apologize right away. You know me. I'm like a second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh strike before a guy gets out kind of guy. Here's what I like about not what he said, but the fact that he said it. It shows you that Jack Edwards, much like some of the best stand-up comedians in the world, is acting without a filter. And you know that you're getting what's exactly in the brain of Jack Edwards at that moment. And I love hearing that guy call a game. I know all the homer accusations, and I don't care. I think that goes along with the territory of being a home team broadcaster regionally, and I'm fine with it. But what I love about it is you're getting raw analysis and description from Jack Edwards. I'll take that guy any day of the week over the guy who won't say anything other than a lot of good guys on that team, 110%, getting pucks in deep, everybody's wonderful, everything is everything. I'll take Jack Edwards, who pushes the boundaries and compares hockey players to Spanish conquistadors and compares playoff series to the Civil War, as opposed to the guy that spits out cliche after cliche at me. I'll take Jack Edwards any day of the week, because well, I know I'm not getting cliches. I'm getting what's exactly in his brain at that moment. And you know right, every now and then he's going to go over the line, and I'm fine with that.
And that's why, you know, I'm often asked about Jack Edwards within the context of Homer announcers, because we've taken our run at Homer announcers before on the blog and on Twitter and stuff like that. I mean, I consider the Pittsburgh Penguins announcing team to be the worst in hockey because of their abject homerism, and I think it detracts from the game. In Edwards' case, though, it becomes something more than homerism. And if you'll forgive the psychoanalysis here, I think he's the Boston Bruins fans' id. I really do. I think this guy is sort of just the basic instinctual thoughts and desires of that fan base sometimes. You know, it is the Revolutionary War when you defeat the Montreal Canadiens. It is comparing Matt Cook to an assassin when he takes out Mark Savard in the nature that he did. There's something so over the top about it. It goes beyond homerism into being sort of the Mr. Hyde to the Boston Bruins Dr. Jekyll.
Does that make then Andy Brickley the ego who sort of mediates between the two sides of the id and the superego then?
Yes.
Is that Andy Brickley's role?
Yes. Completely. Now who's the superego is the question. The conscience. Milbury?
No.
It's got to be something off the somebody off the Nesson broadcast, right? I wonder who it would be.
Stop.
Well, it was obviously Catherine Tappan before she left for the NHL Network.
Before she left for the NHL Network, right. Catherine Tappan's like, all right, you can't do that.
So she leaves, and then look what happens. Unchecked, the id starts comparing Pittsburgh Penguins to senatorial assassins, obviously.
Who's the super ego of the Boston Bruins? I don't know if there's a Jiminy Cricket to the Boston Bruins.
No.
I don't know if there's ever has been a Jiminy Cricket with the Boston Bruins.
Well, it's tough to find a Jiminy Cricket in the Boston sports media, right?
That's truth.
Or any sports media, for that matter.
No.
Everybody dial it. Who's the guy in the Boston sports media saying, dial it back, everybody?
All right, everybody, calm down. Stop that. All that hitting and fighting. Let's have enough of that. This is a gentleman's game.
Again, we've talked about this on the show before. I understand that Ray Shiro went to Jack Edwards and called him out for this thing, and that's one of the reasons why Jack apologized. And I'm hoping that part of that discussion was what we've talked about on the show before, which is that Cook went through a lot of personal shit when he was, you know, admittedly the scummiest scumbag in the league. And he turned his life around. And there's something
turned
to be said
for that. Turned
his game around, too. And turned his game around, too.
Forensic investigations or not.
Right. And that's the thing, is that now Cook and the Penguins go to Ottawa tonight. And we're going to have this on Puck Daddy later, but you can check it out on CBC right now. Or actually, I think maybe Canadian Press is writing about it somewhere. You know, there's the Matt Cook Hate Fest is on from Red Scarf Union, a group of diehard Senators fans. The Matt Cook Hate Fest. They've got wanted posters. It's a whole thing.
Embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
Why is it embarrassing? It's not. Why is it embarrassing?
I mean, the spirit of it is fun. But if you really believe that Matt Cook intended to do that to Erik Karlsson on a standard hockey play stick and pin, then I'm sorry, you don't know the game.
The wanted poster, in case you were wondering, from Red Scarf Union. By the way, Red Scarf Union on Twitter at Red Scarf Union, wanted for robbing Karlsson of his second Norris Trophy. Matt, quote, the dirtiest player in the NHL. Cook, punishment by assassination. Obviously, a Cassian reference.
Who is in the lineup tonight, by the way? But as Eugene Melnick has pointed out, they don't employ goons in Ottawa. Okay.
All I want is this. I want measured response. You could be pissed off that that freakiness happened and Cook, quote unquote, cost Karlsson his quote unquote season, although he'll be back because, well, he's just superhuman, isn't he?
That's insane.
Yeah. And then, but the one thing I don't want to see here is the psychosis from their owner, Eugene Melnick, trickling down to the fans. It's okay to be upset about the way things worked out. It's okay to still think that Matt Cook is the dirtiest player in the league, even though he's not. Go ahead. Who cares? Maybe he's earned that reputation based on the years leading up to the last 2 years of rehabilitation. But come on. If you're one of these people that actually believes Matt Cook intentionally sliced the leg of Erik Karlsson, then just don't go to the game. Stay home. Take a nap. Take some Tylenol. Please.
Go read.
Don't be in society. That's what I'm trying to say to you, because society doesn't need that.
Don't be part of society. Don't participate in this. This is not for you. Don't touch that. Put that down.
You should probably, maybe you should watch some DVDs instead of going to a hockey game. You know, just
more
choose
life
to do
hockey,
that.
If you think that actually occurred. Well, you know what I'm hoping for tonight? That during the, one of the intermissions, as part of the game ops routine, they'll bring Eugene Melnick out at center ice to update us on how the forensic investigation is going.
Clearly.
Where Eugene said he would prove that Matt Cook deliberately, set out to, injure severely Erik Karlsson, because not only did he cut through the sock, but he also cut through the sub-sock.
Sub-sock.
As we all remember.
Yes. Yeah.
I was in the hockey shop, by the way, on Saturday, looking for the sub-sock department. I couldn't find it. I guess the hockey departments up here in Stouffville aren't but what they are elsewhere. Perhaps in Ottawa, they have a sub-sock section.
The sub-sock.
Yeah. Sub-sock, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, CSI Ottawa. Adrian writes in, if it felt like they didn't actually believe it, it's wonderful, but Melnick has kind of been stirring the shit. Well, kind of, yes. Kind of, he has.
Huge. Goes on Primetime Sports and says he's launching a forensic investigation about Matt Cook.
So what is is Cook going to have to answer for this then? Answer for an accident tonight?
No. Nor should he. He had to answer in Boston, right? And he did. First shift, Sean Thornton was out there. And Cook went right over to him and said, all right, I got to do this. And he did. And good for Matt Cook. He understood that. Right? He lost the fight. Thornton beat him up and all that, but whatever. He took his medicine. He had to do that. He does not have to do that tonight. Not a chance. Plus, these are two big points for the Ottawa Senators. I don't think they want that. Right? I mean, they'd love to get Matt Cook off the ice for 5 minutes. He's one of the best penalty killers in the NHL, folks. Whether you love Matt Cook or not, he's a really good hockey player. And there are... Yeah, I'll say it. 29 teams that would want him, including the Ottawa Senators. You don't think Ryan Murray wants that guy on his team? Hell yeah, he does. He's a valuable guy.
The Ottawa Senators, by the way, begin play tonight. 52 points, 4 games remaining. 1 point behind the Islanders, who have 3 games remaining. And tied with the Rangers, who have 3 games remaining. So they've got a game in hand on both the Isles and the Rangers. And Winnipeg, 9th, the only other team in the East that's alive in the playoffs right now, outside looking in. 49 points, 3 games left. They play at Buffalo tonight, obviously, with the game against Washington looming on Tuesday. So,
no, by the way, no Olli Jokinen in that one.
Oh, wow.
Antti Mietinen comes in for Jokinen and Derek Meech in place of Zach Bogosian. Evander Kane didn't skate this morning, but he will play as per Claude Noel.
That was an intense little
Jonas Enroth, by the way. Little Gump. Little Gump's in net tonight. Jonas Enroth.
Intense little game, by the way, between Islanders and Jets over the weekend. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
Real good, in fact.
Let me ask you a Sabres question quick, because we're sort of bouncing all over the map here towards the home stretch of the podcast. Is that it for Ryan Miller in Buffalo?
Yeah, it's got
to
be.
That little wave, to the fans when they were booing him against the Rangers on Friday, was that it? Was that his Patrick Waugh moment?
We are getting perilously close to Patrick Waugh territory. Yeah, and it's got to be the end. And he knows it's the end, too. The question is where it all goes. Because as we talked about with Tyson Nash, the issue is you're going to have 3 goaltenders that are going to be available, and all of them are pretty damn good.
Luongo,
Mike Smith, yep. Ryan Miller. Yep. Now, Mike Smith is the guy you can just sign. You got to trade for Miller. You got to trade for Luongo. Luongo's got an untenable contract. Miller, I think, is better than Mike Smith. But it's going to be interesting to see where a team turns. And the real issue is who needs a goalie?
Mm-hmm.
Tampa's got theirs, evidently. So that's the one destination you always figured you'd have for a guy like Luongo or Miller or Smith again, second time around.
Toronto has theirs in James Reimer, as drafted by John Ferguson. Did Fergie tweet out a congratulations to the Maple Leafs, by the way?
Oh, I was wondering if you're going to get this. So we're really bad. We'll get back to the question of the day on Cook, by the way, in a second. But you bring up the point about the tweet. From Brian Burke with regard to the Toronto Maple Leafs making the playoffs. What was the evidence in front of you? Yep. The tweet from him.
I'm paraphrasing. Congratulations to Dave Nonis. He thanked.
Hang on.
All right. Okay.
Maybe I don't. I thought I did.
Anyway, he congratulated the Toronto Maple Leafs organization from general manager Dave Nonis to head coach Randy Carlyle to captain Dion Phaneuf for making the playoffs.
Right.
Now, does he have Dave and Randy and Dion's phone number?
Yeah.
But had to do this very publicly as a way to become part of the conversation and in his own way remind people that he was – part of building this. Can you do your Brian Burke impression for us here about helping to build this team?
I can't do it on request. I'm sorry. No, it has to.
You don't do requests.
It's something that I conjure at times.
You would drop your pants for a peanut butter sandwich at a party, and you won't do a Brian Burke request on the podcast. All right.
Well, I do like peanut butter.
Didn't it ring kind of shallow to you? like a little totally. A little bit hollow. Like I'm not saying I'm sure he's happy for Nonis and Randy, his buddies, and Dion Phaneuf, the captain that he plucked from the Calgary Flames. But didn't part of it seem like that is Brian rubbing everyone's nose in hockey and the fact that the team that he just got dismissed from just made the playoffs?
Yeah.
That was still his. That was still team truculence.
It's a reminder that, yes, in fact, I built this.
Yeah, I'm still part of the conversation.
I'm still part of the conversation. Yeah. Right.
But you know what? Exactly. Again, general managers stand on the shoulders of those that came before. James Reimer's a pretty big deal for the Toronto Maple Leafs, right? Who's he drafted by?
Ferguson.
Yeah, like there's a few of them, like Carl Gunderson on that team, Nikolai Kulam on that team, Matt Fratton. There's
Grabowski.
Still like a lot of Fergie guys on that team, right? Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of those Fergie guys that are still on the squad. And there's a lot of those Brian Burke guys, Connolly, Komisarek, that were, you know, large financial mistakes that are toiling from the American Hockey League.
Yeah.
But just the tweet itself was like, oh, boy. Has to be part of the conversation still.
As someone who is not in Toronto, you obviously broadcast from the center of the hockey universe. What is the vibe up there a scant 48 hours after the Leafs make the playoffs for the first time since 2004?
You know the sound of the theme we have for Game Show Friday? It's kind of like that. It's kind of been like that since Saturday. You know, when you say, it's Game Show Friday, and that big Broadway music hits, that's kind of the way it's been here in Toronto. But my favorite thing about it on Saturday was watching the euphoria of Leafs fans on Twitter turn into defensive snarkiness at everybody who had the audacity to insult them. Like, did you notice how many Leafs fans really got a good working over on Twitter on Saturday when their team made the playoffs?
Yeah.
And then the way they kept fighting, stop ruining our party. Stop being Debbie Downer on our party. We made the playoffs. Oilers have the longest streak now.
Who do you give the most credit to for them making the playoffs? Reimer?
James Reimer, yep.
Yeah.
I do. James Reimer.
And is Reimer a guy who has made Randy Carlyle look smarter than he is?
Like the old, show me a good goalie, I'll show you a good coach?
Yep.
No, because I think Randy Carlyle's a good coach. Like, I don't think there's smoke and mirrors there. Like, I don't think he's Wizard of Oz.
You could be a good coach, though, and not necessarily have coached a good season.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, the one thing that Carlyle did do is he has afforded this team an identity, right? Like, this team actually knows who they are, and if you're digging ditches, you're digging ditches.
I think Merrick just dug a ditch. I jumped into it. All right. With that, this happens like once a day. You can set your watch to it. With that, you there, Merrick?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. You jumped away for a second. I think it's the podcasting gods telling us that we should probably get to the question of the day before we run out of time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm here. Sorry, I dropped out there.
That's right, buddy. Stouffville, right?
I don't know if it's Stouffville. It might just be my line. I just got to get a clear ISDN line.
Oh, yeah. Clear the lines.
Clear the lines.
Regarding Matt Cook, we're looking for a Jack Edwardsian comparison for Matt Cook. This is from Ryan Classic. Matt Cook is the Archangel Lucifer. Sure, he seems like an angel with his master to nomination and revamped game, but really, he's a tool of the devil. Random penguin, Matt Cook. That's so funny.
Bravo.
This is from Chuck McGinley on the Jack Edwards comments. I really don't care about Jack Edwards. I'm a season ticket holder, so I don't get to hear him unless the bees are on the road. But if Matt Cook wants to walk under ladders, break mirrors, or spill salt, I'm not going to stand in his way. Bad things follow bad people, plain and simple. And Matt Cook has been clearly a bad human being and not the least bit repentant for any of his actions. So in summary, folks, you condemn Jack Edwards to death for, God forbid, saying something stupid. Please try to remember, Matt Cook's change in attitude is not because he suddenly felt a twinge of magnanimity. It was to preserve his own arse and paycheck, but after watching his lame attempt at a low-blowing Adam McQuaid just a couple of minutes live later, it proves that there was substance to Jack's feelings. I will not agree with a lot of that, but I will agree that I don't necessarily think that his remorse, and specifically his remorse about the McDonough hit, which was the kind of the last straw, outweighs the panic in knowing that his National Hockey League career could have been over.
Yeah,
if he didn't change his ways.
Yeah, that was that. I mean, the McDonough hit was that. That was it. I mean, that's when you have like the long talk with Mario Lemieux, and you think about the career. And I'll tell you what, though, if the Penguins would have been done with him, how quickly would Matt Cook have gotten a job? If they would have bought him out.
Tough call. Like, I mean,
on,
you know,
hang on. Right about this fast, like that. No, let me do it again.
Well, yeah, I mean, Rafi Torres got another, you know,
always
picked up, right.
Yeah. Always, they'll always have jobs. Again, easier to tame a tiger than paint stripes on a kitty cat. Ask any GM. Ask any coach.
CM, make an outrageous comparison about Matt Cook in an effort to out Jack Edwards. Jack Edwards. I will do this in a Jack Edwards voice. He will rise up from the city of bridges, having 7 heads and 10 skates, and upon those skates, 10 deadly blades, and upon his heads, the name of Cook.
Oh, God, that was awesome.
Right? We get that sometimes. Peter Kirschenbaum, Matt Cook being nominated for the Masterton is like seeking out Bernie Madoff for investing advice.
Jeez, we got a lot of those. There were a lot, by the way. There were a lot of tweets we just can't read out. But then you know what, Wish? We kind of put that vibe out there. Like, I'm reading some of these coming back in. I'm like, we kind of put it out there, yo.
Yeah, you can definitely see a lot of these on the hashtag MVSW.
yeah, do it.
I can't. There's a few that. I mean, everyone I come across, you know, they're. Anytime you get across, you know, the Nazism.
I know.
Peter P. I imagine most of these will be really stomping on sensitive subjects. No shit. So I'll keep it a bit lighter. It's worse than nominating Glenn Sather for Executive of the Year for trading away Scott Gomez.
Because he made a mess in the first place.
McDonough.
Your mother for
Rachel Donner. See, this is, I can't. All right. All right, we'll just go ahead. Matt Cook is the Chris Brown of the National Hockey League, and the Pens are Rihanna. He may have been abusive in the past, but they've forgiven him, so we should too, right? That's right on the line.
That's
right on the line should tell you how over the line many of these actually are.
Yep. There were a few Chris Brown Rihannas that we got in today. Here's a hip one. And it relates to your New Jersey Devils. Matt Quinn winning the Masterton is like Stéphane Matteau winning MVP for the Blainville Boisbriand of the QMJHL. By the way, they're in the semifinals. Your New Jersey Devils prospect. He has left the team.
He left on the fan bus, right? That's what happened?
Gonzo.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, man, the more I hear about this kid, the more I think that 29th overall pick was really well spent considering they have to give one up the next 3 years. Good job.
It's okay. They'll be really good teams, so they'll be like low picks again, right? Wait a minute.
Maybe Lou misunderstood and he thought that by choosing a bust, he, he fulfills the obligation. Like, you have to give up your pit. Well, let me just use it on a guy who's kind of a head case and won't amount to anything. Is that the same?
I'll tell you, when you look at what the New Jersey Devils were punished, right, how they were punished, you know, there was the money and then there was the draft picks as well. The draft picks is the one that kills you. Not the fact they have to give up a first round pick. That's fine. But when you make them choose when you're going to surrender that pick, that to me is the cruelest. It was almost as if, you know, Bill Daly or Gary Bettman or whomever came up with this punishment said, you know what? And it's going to cost him a first round pick. All right, done. Hold on. I have an even better idea. Make them choose when the pick is going to be. Because even last year when they went to the Stanley Cup final, choosing 29th overall, how do you go back to your team the next year and say, we can win the Stanley Cup? When you've already surrendered pick number 29, shouldn't you be saying, well, of course we're not going to surrender that pick because we're going to pick 30th this year?
Yeah.
It was
I don't
so
want to
cruel.
Say that this
that
thing was
twisted of a knife.
Yeah, I don't want to say this thing was a saw-like torture contraption, but I'm pretty sure NHL hired demonic puppet on a tricycle as a VP.
When you look at some of the history of cruel punishments, this is one of them. That's like, okay, you know, pick one. You know, it's like you have two children. Pick one. You're only going to get one back. How do you do that? You have three first-round picks. How are you going to choose that? Oh, it's cruel. It's cruel.
Yes.
It's cruel.
It's a regular old Kobe's choice scenario.
Kobe's choice. That's pretty hip, Wish.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you. We've had Super Id and Kobe's choice on the show today. We're very literate today.
Here's how old I am. I saw Sophie's Choice in the theater.
Wow, there you go.
That's how old I am.
Hey, one last one before we go from Stephen Schiffer. Thank you. Because we have to even these things out, with apologies to Ottawa fans, nominating Matt Cook for the Masterton is like nominating Erik Karlsson for the best defenseman in the NHL. Oh, wait, that happened.
Oh.
It's a burn.
I guess if you want your defenseman to play some defense.
Well, the reason he won the Norris is because he got them into the playoffs, obviously.
Clearly, because that's what every trophy is supposed to do. The Calder. How can you give it to Huberto? How are you going to give it to Huberto for? His team's not going to make it. It's Brandon Saad.
Why would
you? His team's going to win the President's Trophy. Give it to Brandon Saad.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Thank you to Ryan Lambert for sparking a nice putting the versus in Merrick versus Wyshynski moment at the start of the show. Thank you to Tyson Nash, the color commentator for the Phoenix Coyotes, for
Mark
letting
Erickson.
Us know he still hates the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah. And Mark Erickson submits, and as current as you are on movies, it was probably the most recent movie you saw in the theater, too. No, sir, that would be Seabiscuit.
Jesus.
No, actually, really? It was Wild Things. Where the Wild Things Are. Was the last one.
Oh, Where the Wild... Oh, I was going to say Wild Things. That would be...
No, not the Jiggle
I'd
Jiggle.
I'd give you a
no,
stick tap for that one. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
On, off all Denise eyes, Richards. Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Denise Richards' second best role behind Dr. What the hell was her first name in that Bond movie? Her last name was Christmas, but what was her first name in that movie?
You're asking me?
Doctor, damn it. Why isn't somebody
coming
to the rescue
you? You want me to ask you about like, the history of first-round draft picks of the Regina Pats? Because that's what you're asking me to do right now.
Hang on. I'm just going to look it up before we go because this is bothering me.
It's going to bug you.
Oh, that's right. Dr. Christmas Jones. And why? Why do you ask? Is her name Dr. Christmas Jones? You know
why? Wish.
So James Bond can say, "I thought Christmas only comes once a year." That's the whole reason. That's the whole reason. It's a line in the movie.
There's a guy in the NHL right now, not a player, but an assistant coach, mm-hmm. whose nickname is Two People. You know why? And he got this in his playing days.
Why?
Because the thought was no one person could be that dumb. So his nickname is Two People. No one person can be that dumb.
The actual exchange from The World Is Not Enough, which, by the way, I kind of enjoyed as a Bond movie. I thought was fun. Good henchman, good villain, Electric King. I enjoyed it a lot better than Tomorrow Never Dies. James Bond says, "I was wrong about you." Dr. Christmas Jones, who, by the way, I believe was a nuclear physicist. Denise Richards. Yeah, how so? James Bond, "I thought Christmas only comes once a year." Can't beat that dialogue with a stick, I tell you.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Not at all. Okay, thanks everybody for joining us on the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow. And
We got to hustle. The Yahoo guys are here for me, by the way.
Oh, we got to go. We're doing video. The video stuff is happening.
Let's see if we can actually get it right this week.
Thanks to Kevin, Colin, and Triple P for reminding us about Christmas Jones. Last name is not Christmas. That'd be preposterous. There's only one last name Christmas allowed in movies, and that, of course, is Lloyd Christmas from Dumb and Dumber. We will talk to you tomorrow. Bye.